You and I are from different worlds. We have not a single thought or feeling in common. We could never hope to understand each other, let alone be friends. But I do know what it took for you to say that.
A truce, then? She asked.
All right, truce.
He held out his hand and she took it. Her skin was smooth as the petal of a rose, her hand slim and cool, but her grip was as firm as a man's. Good night, she said, and released her hand and turned away. He watched her walk back towards her own tent. The moon was 2 days from full, and the white dress was ethereal and misty. Beneath it her body was slim, and her legs long and elegant. In that moment he admired her spirit and liked her more than he had ever done in all the time he had known her. Sean slept as lightly as a hunter and a soldier. The natural sounds of the bush did not disturb him, nor even the shrieks of the hyena pack around the fortified trophy shed where the lion skins were curing. However, at the light scratch on the canvas of his tent, he was instantly awake and reaching for his flashlight in the .577 propped at the head of his bed.
"Who is it?" he asked quietly.
"It's me, Job."
Sean glanced at his Rolex wristwatch. The luminous hands pointed to 3 o'clock.
"Come in. What is it?" "One of the trackers, who we left on the river, has come into camp. He has run 20 miles.
Sean felt the back of his neck prickle, and he swung both legs out of bed.
"Yes," he said eagerly. "At sunset this evening, Tukutila crossed the river out of the national park."
"Is it certain?"
"It is certain. They saw him close by. It is Tukutila, the angry one, and he has no collar around his neck."
"Where is Matatu?" Sean stood up and reached for his pants, and the little Ndrobo piped up at the entrance.
"I'm ready, Bwana."
"Good. We leave in 20 minutes. Marching packs and water bottles. We'll take Pumula in Shadrach's place. I want to be on Tukutila's spoor before it's light enough to see it." Bare-chested, Sean strode across to Ricardo's tent and heard his even snores as he paused at the flap.
"Capo?"
The snores cut off abruptly.
"Are you awake?"
"I've got an elephant for you. Get your ass out of the sack. Tukutila has crossed. We leave in 20 minutes.
"Hot damn!"
He could hear Ricardo was still half asleep. He stumbled about the dark tent. "Where the hell are my pants? Hey, Sean, wake Claudia, will you?" There was a lantern burning in Claudia's tent. She must have heard the excitement. "Are you awake?" Sean asked at the flap, and she opened it and stood with a lantern light behind her. Her nightdress reached almost to her ankles. There was lace at her throat and cuffs. But the cloth was so fine that the light struck through it, and her naked body was in silhouette.
"I heard you telling Papa," she said. "I'll be ready. Will we be walking? Should I wear my hiking boots or moccasins?"
He was certain that she was putting on this show deliberately, and he felt a prudish outrage that was totally alien to his nature. "Today you'll walk further and faster than you ever have in your life before," he told her harshly. "She's showing herself off like a tramp," he thought, ignoring the proven fact that his taste usually ran strongly towards tramps, just when I was starting to respect her. And a reprimand rose to his lips. He bit it off and tried not to look at the flowing shape of her hips, as graceful as the lines of a Celadon porcelain vase thrown by a master craftsman of the Tang dynasty. He wanted to turn away to show his indifference and his contradictory disapproval, but he was still standing there when she let the tent flap drop. "Truce be damned," he muttered furiously as he strode back to his tent. "She's still in the ring throwing punches." But his anger puzzled him. With any other woman, even one half as lovely, he would have been delighted by the exhibition. "She's got more class than that," he explained to himself, and then remembered how much he despised and disliked her. "This bimbo is getting you all up a gum tree," he warned himself, and then burst out laughing. The dreadful gloom of Shadrach's amputation and the imminent loss of his license were dispelled. He was going to hunt one of Africa's legendary beasts, and the presence of this woman, in some unaccountable manner, added spice to his mood of high anticipation. There was frost on the grass in the low place they crossed. It sparkled in the headlights, and the game they saw was lethargic with the cold, barely moving out of the road to let the Toyota pass in the night. They reached the ford on the Chiwewe River an hour before dawn. The waters were black and shining as anthracite in the last beams of the moon, and the tall trees along either bank were a silvered host, like two opposing armies of mythical giants. Sean parked the Toyota well off the track and left one of the Skinners to guard it. They fell naturally into established hunting formation, with the clients in the centre. Pumula took up Shadrach's old position in the drag, a muscular, taciturn man with a thick, woolly bush of a black beard. He carried Ricardo's Rigby on its sling. All the men, including Ricardo, were under field packs. Even Claudia carried her own water bottles. Job had Ricardo's second rifle, the Weatherby, over his shoulder, and as always, Sean lugged the .577 Nitro Express. Once the hunt had begun, he never let it out of his hands. They moved out, heading upstream, and within a mile they had warmed up and were pushing harder. Sean noticed that Claudia moved well on those long legs of hers and was keeping up without difficulty. She gave him a saucy grin as she noticed his appraisal. The dawn light was hardening when the tracker, who had come in with the news of Tukutila's crossing, exclaimed and pointed ahead. It was light enough to make out a fresh blaze on the trunk of a pod mahogany tree, which guarded a low place on the river bank. "There," said the tracker, "I marked the spoor." At a glance, Sean saw that this was a natural crossing place for large animals. Troops of hippo had pioneered a pathway through the reed beds and down the 10-foot river bank. Herds of buffalo and elephant passing over it had consolidated it and improved the gradient. The African veldt is crisscrossed with a network of game trails, and a dozen or so of these came in through the forest, like the spokes of a wheel, to concentrate on this river crossing. Everyone in the party quickened step at the tracker's exclamation, but Matatu reached the main pathway ahead of them and darted down it, turning his head to use the light of dawn most effectively, dabbing lightly at the earth with the tip of the peeled wild willow wand he carried. He had not gone 5 paces before he straightened and looked back at Sean, his features wreathed in wrinkles of happiness and excitement.
"It is him," he chirped. "These are the feet of the father of all elephants. It is Tukutila. It is the angry one."
Sean looked down at the great dished spoor in the fine dust of the game path, and he felt as though a spring tide had begun to flow in his life. His excitement was replaced by a sense of destiny, an almost religious gravity. "Matatu," he said, "take the spoor." Formally, he announced the start of the hunt. The spoor was clear as a highway, following the game trail directly into the forest away from the river. The old bull was striding out briskly, as though he knew that the crossing was the danger point. Perhaps that was why he had chosen to cross at sunset, so that darkness would cover him until he was clear. For 5 miles he had gone without a check, and then suddenly he had turned aside from the game trail into a thicket of rambling thorn which had come into blossom and new shoot. He had moved back and forth, feeding on the blooms and succulent shoots, and his spoor was confused, the thicket trampled and torn. Matatu and Job went into the thorn thicket to unravel it, while the rest of the party hung back to let them work unhindered.
"I'm thirsty."
Claudia unhooked one of the water bottles from her belt.
"No," Sean stopped her. "If you drink on your first thirst, you'll want to drink all day, and we only have just begun."
She hesitated a moment, considering defying him, but then she hooked the bottle back on her belt.
"You're a hard taskmaster," she said.
Matatu whistled softly on the far side of the thicket.
"He has worked the spoor out," Sean told them, and let them through the thorn.
How much have we gained? He asked Matatu. They had started almost 10 hours behind the bull, but every time he had paused to feed, they had cut that lead.
He did not feed long, Matatu shrugged, and now he is going hard again.
The bull had turned off the game trail and was following a stony ridge, almost as if he was deliberately obscuring his own spoor. He left no indications for the average human eye to follow, but Matatu went after him with complete authority.
Are you sure he's still on it? Ricardo asked anxiously.
Capo, you've hunted with Matatu too often to ask that question, Sean told him.
But what can he see? Claudia wanted to know. It's just rocks and gravel.
The elephant's pads leave a scuff on the rock. They bruise the lichen, leave smears of dust. There's fine grass growing between the stones. He's disturbed it, bending the stems in the direction of his passing. The disturbed grass catches the light differently.
Could you follow it? Claudia wanted to know.
And Sean shook his head.
No, I'm not a magician.
They had been speaking in barely audible whispers, but Sean said, That's enough chatter. Let's keep it down to a bellow from now on. So they went on in silence, and the forest about them was a perpetually changing show. There were 40 different varieties of the Combritum family of trees, and this was not exclusively Combritum forest, as many other varieties were mingled with them, each with a distinctive shape of trunk, differing in the colour and texture of bark, some with branches denuded by winter, others with dense foliage of a myriad shades of green and gold and orange and cinnabar. At times the forest enclosed them like a palisade, then only moments later opened vistas of far hills and weirdly shaped kopjes of open glades and flaces from some of which the tall grass had been burned, and the tender shoots laid a carpet of green over the black ash. The new growth of grass had attracted herds of antelope into the place. They stood out in the open, sable antelope with long horns curved like scimitars, the proud necks of blood Arabs, upper bodies sooty black as the ash of the flay, and their bellies snowy white. Reed buck, with horns pricked forward inquisitively, and tails like white powder puffs. Zebras at a distance, seeming not striped but a uniform grey colour, and wildebeest with Roman noses and scraggly beards chasing each other like clowns in mindless circles, stirring the black ash in a cloud about themselves. When the lion is not hunting, the animals that are his natural prey are amazingly trusting and will stand and stare at him as he slouches past within 50 yards of them. In the same way, they seem to sense that this file of humans was not a threat, and they let them approach closely before moving off at a leisurely trot, and Claudia's delight buoyed her so she felt no fatigue even after 4 hours of hard walking. In a gorge between two hills, water had been trapped in a narrow rock pool. It was stagnant and green and bubbling with the gas of rotting vegetation, but the old bull had drunk from it and left a pile of his spongy yellow dung beside it.
You take 10 minutes rest here, Sean told them. You can have a drink now.
He looked at Claudia. But try to limit it to 2 mouthfuls, unless you'd like to try some of that. He indicated the foul pool, and she grimaced. He left her sitting beside her father and went to where Matatu stood alone at the head of the pool.
What is it? He asked.
After 20 years, he could read the little man's moods. Matatu shook his head, and his wrinkles sagged lugubriously.
Something is not right here, Matatu told him. The bull is unhappy. He goes one way and then the other. He travels swiftly, but without purpose. He does not feed, and he walks as though the ground burns his feet.
Why is that, Matatu?
I do not know, he admitted. But I do not like it, Bwana.
Sean left him and went back to where Claudia sat.
Let's take a look at your feet.
He had spotted the slight limp she developed in the last hour.
Are you serious?
She began to smile, but he took one of her feet in his lap, untied the laces and pulled off her boot and sock.
Her feet were long and narrow, like her hands. But the skin was delicate, and there was a bright pink spot on her heel, and another on the ball of her big toe. Sean cleaned the tender spots with cotton wool and surgical spirit. It gave him an intimate and sensuous pleasure to handle those finely formed feet. But he told her severely, "These must have been hurting you. Now don't try to be brave. Another few miles and you'd have had blisters like a bunch of grapes, and we would have had a cripple on our hands." He taped the tender spots. "Change socks," he ordered, "and the next time, tell me as soon as it hurts." She obeyed him meekly, and they went on.